episode is brought to you by D7. Find out why every tech should have a copy of D7 by visiting foolishit.com. And don't forget to catch the Podnuts episode, Podnuts episode 74 with the creator, Nick Shaw.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to Podnuts Daily, episode number 369. I am Cody Cooper, and I have a wonderful guest on the show who actually answered a call for guests, which we'll reference later in the show. Nightwise from Nightwise.com is here to share some of his hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Nightwise, how's it going tonight?
Well, I always wanted to say this. Good morning, America. I'm doing fine. It's 8 a.m. here at the morning. GMT plus one. We are enjoying a lovely sunny day in the east of Belgium, so everything's good.
Fantastic, fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope a lot of our listeners I know are aware of you, but you are a podcasting hero of mine, so to have you on one of our shows, seriously, to have you on one of our shows is a pleasure, and I've gotten to know you much better the last few weeks, so this is a treat for me.
Well, you were calling out for guests, and I thought, you know, why not? The time difference is actually kind of working out for us. I've got a day off today. We're going to go to the north of France for a couple of days. So I decided it would be great to slide that in. And I'm absolutely thrilled to be on Podnuts and to be associated with Podnuts. I'm an avid listener, and I'm enjoying this. Being here, it's actually a big honor for me. So
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, for those of you who may not have heard of Nightwise, could you just give us a quick rundown of who you are and what you do?
let me see. My name's Nightwise. I am the host slash producer of Nightwise.com, which is a website with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Basically, what it means is we have a website, a video blog, an audio podcast that deals with cross-platform sliding, having multiple operating systems in your house, Linux, Mac, Windows, iOS, Android, whatever, and using that technology to work for you as opposed to being enclosed in a proprietary software ecosphere. That's a big word, but you know what I mean. You can we find ways to slide across them and pick the best out of any OS that works for us, and find hacks and tips and tweaks how to make it all work together.
Yeah, that's a very good summary. And I got to tell you, and actually, how long have you been doing the show? Because it's been years, right?
It's been, I think, 2005 or something like that, or even before that. I think I started listening to podcasts when the Daily Source Code with Adam Curry was still in double digits. So I am that old, and I've been into podcasting for that long. So yeah,
very cool. Yeah, and if you guys haven't listened to his show, and he has, I mean, great hardware reviews. For instance, he went to a Samsung event a few weeks back. He gave a great review, which aired on HPR. Am I right?
Yep. Yeah. We were invited by Samsung to come and cover their event of the launch of their new product line. It was very interesting. It was actually the first time we actually went on a press trip. I am considered by Belgian press standards a blogger. I'm not an official journalist. You need a special form for that, or a special standard for that. So they did invite us along, which was, it was very intimidating. I was sharing the train and the hotel with actual Belgian tech journalists. And I was the only blogger there, together with Stéphane Lesage, who is a podcaster of a Belgian podcast. So it was pretty intimidating, but it was a lot of fun to do.
Very fun. Yeah, and a lot of great content. Please check out Nightwise.com. I honestly say I haven't listened to one of your episodes just once. I've always gone back and referenced them or listened to them two or three times, like in a row over a couple of days. They're all great, filled with many tips.
I've had the comment that that Nightwise.com podcasts resemble Belgian pralines, where every episode, we try to make every episode stand on its own and have a different taste and flavor, so you can, you know, go back to them whatever you want to.
Well, yeah, and I don't want to go off on a huge tangent here, but that's another thing that I really like and respect about your network is the fact that each of them are standalone shows. So even if you haven't listened to any of his content before, you could literally just start it, for instance, because he titles them very well, too. They're very specific. For instance, you had an episode on Mumble recently.
Correct.
Yeah, and then you had a great episode on USB sticks and how to utilize them for, it was called Life on a Stick. But yeah, they are standalone. They do reference each other somewhat a little bit. But yeah, great encapsulated single experiences.
It makes production sometimes a little harder because you really have to work around a theme. But especially the last couple of months, I've had the joy of having a very active community around Nightwives.com that is chipping in. I don't pull this. I used to pull all of this stuff out of thin air. Luckily, I have also been able to pool the resources of the Nightwives.com community and get experts on and have people talk about things. It's a lot of fun to do. There's a lot of research that goes into our episodes, but it's mostly personal interests, like, you know, what am I working on today? Nightwives.com started out as a personal blog. We all evolve. It was really a personal blog where I also wrote down things about what was happening through my day. More and more, I got to the theme of how do I let technology work for me? And it just grew from there. And I think it's about a year or 2 years ago that we completely revamped the sites, revamped the logo, revamped the brand to what it is today. Thanks to also somebody out of my community who's I want to thank Gerard for doing that. He's a PR specialist, a fan of the show, and he helped us out really to find our brand. And the tagline, Hacks, Tips, and Tweaks for Cross-Platform Geeks, summarized what Nightwives.com had grown into over the years, and now we're really happy to find our brand.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in the future. I mean, if you're putting out the content like you're putting out now, you're going to do very, very well.
Thank you.
Now, we had you on specifically to talk about some computer stories, because can you give us sort of, aside from your podcasting, your tech, your background in tech?
I am, my day job is I am an infrastructure architect for a multinational recycling company in the Netherlands. I've been in IT for, let me guess, again, 16 years. Started out where we all start out, in the computer shop. I was very fortunate. It all started for me when I met my wife. I was an educator, so I worked with disabled people, psychiatric wards and stuff like that. I had a social background. I met my wife during my training, and then I, of course, met my father-in-law, who was a big geek and who had three daughters but no sons, and I was into computers a little bit, so we kind of clicked. And he was my mentor, and I was his padawan, and that's where it all started. So it started out in a computer shop for me, where I learned a lot of hardware and software. Went to assistant system network administrator from there, network administrator for a school district for 8 schools, ICT coordinator from there, and IT consultant from there. But what I've always been doing on the side is these little side projects where I think it's important to stay in touch with what's going on. And the best way to do that is to help out small companies or private individuals with their computer and the challenges that come with that. I've always enjoyed doing that, doing basically tech support.
Very cool. And yeah, you're right. Unless you're out there actively helping or doing those side jobs, you can come kind of disconnected as far as what the current needs might be of a small business or home user.
Then you become a manager and you basically manage things that you don't really actively use anymore. I'm very blessed to be able to combine what I do for Nightwives.com, which is tech journalism, with the technical knowledge that I have in my day job. So I pull from those resources constantly, and it's always a joy to do when you're making up plannings and trying to predict technologies. You are the guy in the company that knows what's coming. I'm running around yelling, "Beware of Tizen! It's coming! It's coming!" And in the beginning, people looked at me funny, like, oh my God. And now it's like, oh, it's the prophecy. Yeah. So it's like I'm prophesizing a little bit what's trending and stuff. I like doing that.
Very cool. And speaking of what's coming, one of the bigger topics you were bringing up today with us was the fact that people and businesses are going to be migrating off of XP soon.
Yep. Correct. I have an internet superhero system where I try to keep my personal identity and my day job and my podcasting identity and my podcasting brand separate. But sometimes I can mix, but I generally won't mention where I work. So that's not a personal thing or anything. But I am looking at a migration of about 2,600 people from XP to Windows 8, from Office 2003 to Office 365, and from file shares to SharePoint Online. So that's a massive, massive cultural shock.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, no matter if you are a home user, business, or in education, it's night and day as far as the initial environment that you're being put into. So, no, oh, go ahead.
I like the swing of that, night and day, night with a K. Then
there we go.
I've recently because I think it's important to have, not only for the Nightwise.com community but also for my day job, a real look and feel of what's going to go on. I did a migration of a person who was running Windows XP on an iMac to running Windows 8 on a Mac Mini, kind of sliding her from OS to OS. I did that recently. It was a very interesting experience to see what tools you need, and especially how do you train the user and where do they start?
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because I would say that people are leaving XP more out of there are some security concerns, but also it's a bit dated, to be honest. The end of life comes early or middle of next year, so the updates aren't going to happen anymore. And for home users, that might not be a big concern. I mean, it should be, but to be honest, it's just not for some people. But for businesses, especially if you're talking about pharmacies or medical that are have to keep those secure records and make sure they're not that they're continuing to get the updates to secure that information, that's a huge part of what they need to do. So either they're transitioning to another version of Windows, or potentially to Mac, like you mentioned, or to Linux. And you were talking about bringing some tools and some tips that might help people in all different kind of user groups migrate from away from XP to something else.
The one thing that people always say is, like, we have to move, we have to move away from XP because XP will be end of life in 2014. XP has been, sorry, that's my dog outside. XP has been dead for quite some time. And that's not because Microsoft doesn't patch anymore. A lot of companies don't patch. They just, because of continuity of their systems or certain proprietary software that's outdated, they cannot always apply those patches. So the fact that patches are stopping, that's not the main concern. I mean, Java vulnerabilities are a way bigger problem for enterprises these days.
Oh, yeah.
The reason XP is dead is because of hardware drivers. Hardware drivers for newer hardware just aren't being made anymore. XP has been killed off by the hardware suppliers a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And for the home user, I mean, if the PC that's running XP isn't becoming extremely slow, and it doesn't crash and burn, even the end user has no reason to leave the system. So, people keep calling me, end of life, end of life. People don't care about end of life. Right. They care about end of life of their hardware, or their operating systems continue to blue screen, or they buy a new computer. That's basically the migration path for the private person.
Yeah, you do bring up a good point. And trust me, when I had my computer repair business, I had people calling me, wanting to buy specific cables they could use on their Windows 95 machine. And this is just 2 or 3 years ago. So as long as their web browser is functional, and they have their AOL icon somewhere on the desktop, as long as it's huge and pixelated, usually they're fine.
It's like it's like looking at your toaster and thinking like, wow, those spring elements in my toaster aren't really springy enough anymore. Maybe
right.
I should look for a service pack to really do something with that. And, you know, the handle, it's not really as ergonomic as it is in the modern days. It's becoming a little bit retro. People don't care. It's a toaster. You know, bread goes in, toast comes out. Done. Mm-hmm. Computers, bread goes in, toast comes out. Done. Windows 95, it still does it? Yes. Are you serving up malware for the rest of the Russian hemisphere? Probably. But, you know, it still works.
Okay. So, specifically in what you're doing, you're having a lot of migration, at least in the one example you gave earlier mm-hmm. and on the show so far, from XP to 8 in a professional environment. So what kind of tools are you using or suggesting that they use to not only back up their data, but potentially, like, when I hear everybody talk about Windows 8, like, text that I trust, because I have yet to actually use it at home, and I don't know if I ever will, but they a lot of them say, it's great, but I had to do these 5 things to it to make it usable for me. So...
Yeah, I love the fact that a lot of people say Windows 8 sucks. Have you used it? No, and I never will. So, okay, do you like Sprouts? No. Have you ever tasted Sprouts? No, and I never will. Okay, does that make you a Sprout expert? Probably not. But yeah, and this I'll take this one user case as an example. So we had a 7-year-old iMac. Sorry, now the bells are ringing. Everybody's making a ruckus here in Belgium. She had a 7-year-old iMac that she had bought to replace her aging and falling apart XP system. Because she was very... I tried to switch her to Mac because she is in graphics. I said, you know, you might want to go to OS X and that might work for you. No. She knew her workflow. She knew what she liked and she wanted XP. Well, fine. It's all in XP on there. Did a migration from XP to XP. Probably not very exciting. That was it. And she's been working on that machine for 7 years. And now it was really starting to get slow. It was a dual core iMac with 2 gigs of RAM. So, you know, probably could have done with an upgrade, but it had never been reinstalled. It had seen daily use. And this woman actually lugged around a 21-inch iMac in a special bag in the airplane from Bali to Belgium several times a year. So she was using it as a kind of a laptop.
Okay.
So she called me up. She said, like, yeah, it's good. It's getting really slow. I think it's time for something new. And quite basically, quite frankly, my spine isn't up to dragging this baby around anymore. So we might look into something else. So I suggested, you know, you could go for a laptop, any laptop, if you want to stay on Windows. No, I don't want a laptop because I need a good calibrated screen. So that's when I suggested a Mac Mini, which is basically something she could put in her hand luggage. And take it with her. So we did that. But, you know, because I knew that there were 7 years separating the iMac and the Mac Mini, I said, you know, we are going to go towards a new operating system. And because she used it for her business, I needed an official license. So not a volume license, not a, I don't know, the Pirate Bay unlimited fair use policy
right,
license.
Right.
So I said, you know, we need a Windows 8, an official one. So buying that is kind of a challenge if you don't upgrade. Buying a OEM license of 64-bit Windows 8 had me sending her to a special store that we have around here that does books and software.
Okay.
So that was an interesting challenge. And Office was the same thing because it's so complicated. And for the end user, she said, I couldn't make heads or tails of this.
Well, I could speak from personal experience. Just a few days ago, I was at Costco, which is a large warehouse type of bulk store here. Mm-hmm. And you go in their software section, and it's funny because it's just these pallets of cardboard sleeves, you know, with all the different software packages on them. And I saw maybe 4 or 5 different, you know, flavors of Windows 8 and then several of Office. And yeah, if you're the end home user and you just don't know what you're doing, not only do the prices boggle your mind, but the options, what you have, if you're upgrading, if it's an actual first install, you know, all the hardware specs you need to have. Yeah, it can be
OEM, retail.
Right.
Corporate-wise, I was at a Microsoft presentation a couple of months ago, and they had one techie and three lawyers.
Okay.
Seriously.
I don't doubt it.
Seriously, one techie to tell us what it was and three lawyers to explain the licensing. So,
or to make sure he didn't say too much.
Also.
And there you go.
What was the case here is that I needed to migrate her over from XP to Windows 8, which is, in all fairness, user interface wise, quite a cultural shock, but technically not really exciting because you're going from Windows to Windows. Mm-hmm. So kids, I'll try to give you a golden rule whenever you are backing up somebody's data. What I always do is I call ahead and I say, listen, user, back up your data. Back up everything you need, buy an external hard drive and drag and copy everything you need to that external hard drive. You do it. And then 2 days before I go to the appointment, or a day before, I say, have you done it? And they probably haven't. And so they do it. And then I get there and they are very proud and they show me their little drive and they say, like, I've backed up everything that I own onto that drive and it's very important to me. I said, you have everything? Yes. And then I said, that's great. So we put that drive aside and then we start over and then I do the backup. What I mostly think is very important to backup is, if we're still talking local software, my documents folder. Actually, their complete documents and settings folder. Period. Everything. Application data, my documents, everything. So that is something that gets backed up. And how I do that is I boot with my live CD. I don't boot into the OS because I don't want files to be locked by the OS. I basically say, is that your operating system? Yes, that's very nice for your operating system. So I boot from a live CD. That's my first step. And then I copy over the documents and settings folder to my external drive. And then I look if there is in the root directory, if there are any other funky folders. Everything that's not named documents and settings, program files, and Windows, I pick up and I put it aside. Because that might be application folders. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Then I boot the system for the first time. One of the things that I do then is I basically have all their files, but I want to be sure. So I check if I start doing an inventory of what applications that they use, so that I have a list of what applications that they use. And if there's anything on there on which I don't have the installer with me right now, I ask them, do you have the CD for this? Do you have the CD for that? Mostly it's yes or no, or do you have a service contract on that piece of software? And I also ask, I make an inventory of the software that they have and the contacts should they require them, because sometimes they have financial software. And, migrating these babies is sometimes kind of a hassle, and I don't. And this is something that's very important. If you assume that you say, oh yeah, the software is in that folder and it's an executable and it looks really simple and I think the databases are there, I'll just drag this over. Don't assume, especially with financial or proprietary software, contact the vendor. If they say, sorry, I don't have a license for this, I don't have a support license for this, walk away. Raise your hands and walk away, because you are tampering with the business of this user. Never take your tech ego into a situation like that where you say, lady, I can fix anything. Don't. Walk away. Because even if you are technically powerful enough, strong enough, smart enough to, really do brain surgery on the registry and cut this thing out and put it in there, you might get it working technically. That's good. You might get a phone call 3 months in. Sorry, I can't find half of my invoices. You touched my computer. Then you are basically fracked. Yep. Or you can actually have the user get into legal problems with the supplier because you've moved over a piece of software and he doesn't have a license for it.
Right, and I've run into that too, where not necessarily with financial software, but you know, you get calls, you know, to do basic virus cleaning, and you determine it's that one program they use all the time that they downloaded off of BitTorrent or whatever, and you say, well, this is the issue, we need to remove this. Oh, well, no, I need to keep that, but it's causing all these problems. Well, then we'll just erase the problems, but keep the software. They're perfectly willing to endure a certain amount of pain and struggle to keep that one tool. In some cases, it's entertainment. In some cases, it's a multi-$1,000, you know, graphics software or whatever. Or in this case, potentially a financial software. And before I forget, what live CD do you use for that specific? What CD did you use in that instance?
With this instance, I've just used a fairly recent copy of Ubuntu because it has fairly good hardware support, and I only needed to copy over things. So I use it to partition drives should I need to, and to copy over things or to recover files should I need to. But that's just a stock Ubuntu CD, whatever I have with me, because I use it for... I have other tools for system recovery and stuff, but I don't do those a lot anymore, so I'm not really up to specs on those. But for file moving and live booting, I just use a standard Ubuntu CD because it gives me all of the functionalities I need at that moment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And much what you're speaking about earlier too, especially techs who might be starting out, you know, you'll either have someone who won't have any of the CDs. Maybe they bought it off of a friend or a local, like a mom and pop shop who maybe didn't give them either legitimate software or didn't give them discs. But okay. I've had people say, yeah, I have it. It's right up there in that box. And you pull the box off the shelf, it's completely empty. And then they go, oh, maybe I don't have it. Okay, then I don't know where it is. Or they have a binder, like one of those huge, like 256 CD binders with every single CD from every single camera, scanner, copier, printer, computer, laptop, TV, DVD player that they've ever got. I've had that too.
I think that's about as adorable as a 4-year-old in a Star Trek costume. I go like, oh, you get everything. Yes, that's very good of you.
It's a photo album. You can flip it back and go, oh wow, this is back in 85. Like they have a page for floppies in the front. That's so
cute. I know. And they still have like Works 95 and stuff. I love that. Okay, for you tech support Padawans, Jedi apprentices, let me get my Yoda voice on.
If user does not have legal software, away you must walk from computer.
There you go.
Don't. I know what it used to be like. I know that, you know, people didn't have diddly squat, and you would say, you know, I'm friends with the guys in Sweden with the big boat. I can get you anything. Don't. Because, A, you will be pirating software that is not legal. Two, you will be going through all the hassle of cracking that software and running into issues when that crack doesn't work. Don't do it. That crack might actually be a malevolent program and you're infecting the PC you're supplying to the user. Don't do that. The user is then get stuck with illegal software. Don't do that. And if ever there is an issue where the user is going to get an inspection of his computer and the people that are, the software police or the key generator SWAT team that, you know, sails down from heaven by ropes, right, is going to say, you have illegal software. And the user is going to go, he did it in a snap. Don't do it. You are actually doing these people a disservice. And here you have a perfect opportunity to be, there are three stages in awesomeness. You have the basic awesome. The basic awesome goes to the store and buys the software. That's basic awesome. That's cool. More awesome is the guy that can get everything from the guys in Sweden with the big boat. Literally everything. Cool. But uber awesome is the guy that says, money? We don't use money over here. We got free software. And that's the awesome, that's the third factor of awesome. That's being able to not only give a client OpenOffice, but teach him how to use OpenOffice. Not only give a client Google Docs, but having him use Google Docs and actually saving him money by giving him a tool that's free, but only the smart kids know about, instead of, you know, I have this cracked CD of Office 2010 here. because with all the online activations and the constant callbacks and the constant activation, and now with software as a service, the days of key gens are over. Because just let your client buy the software. That's a golden tip.
No, I ran into that with a customer once. They had to have WordPerfect 7. It couldn't be a new one. It couldn't be an old one. I tried giving him OpenOffice, and I said, this doesn't cost you anything. It looks exactly the same. Like, I booted him up side by side on two of the same machines. But, you know, some people are very particular to the kind of cars they buy or the type of mustard they purchase. You just have to let them be, like Chris Berry said this, you know, you have to let customers be customers. You know, they will have that particular thing they have to have. And you can't argue it out of them.
But then they need to fork over the cash to get it.
Right, right.
I want a Mercedes. I mean, nobody told you to, you know, I want a Mercedes. You don't have the money for a Mercedes. That's okay. Okay, kid, go steal me one. What? I'm not going to steal you one.
Well, but if you pay the kid enough, then it can happen.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then the Mercedes is in front of his door, and the police drives by, and the police says, well, that's not your Mercedes. And you say, I don't know, some kid put it here. And the kid screwed. So that's one. The second thing that I think is an issue with using cracked or hacked software is that if it doesn't work anymore, you have to go back. And you have to go back and back and back and back. And my time is precious to me, and I have found an autistic way to express the value of my time to my customers. I charge the frack out of them.
Yeah.
And that way they know if they call me and I come down, I charge my hours. And if they say you're expensive, I say I'm an expert. And that's very arrogant, but sometimes it helps. And I'm not some hobby kid who loves to do this for his job. My dad-in-law used to be like that. He did it all for free, and he would have computers lining up in his living room, and he would be the good guy who helped everybody out. And he taught me. I taught from the master, and I started charging right away. And people said, like, isn't computers your hobby? Yes, my computers are my hobby. Your computers are my extra source of income. That'll be 30 euros, please.
Right.
And that was way in the beginning. But I charge, and I admit that, and I don't have a lot of private clients anymore, and the ones that I still help are actually friends. But for the rest, where I used to do this kind of tech support for, I charged. And the more I charged, the more respect I got, and the more my expertise was seen as valid because there was an hourly fee connected to it. Don't overcharge. You're not a rock star, but please, please don't be the good kid that, you know, I'll help out your computer, Mrs. McCluskey, because you're screwed for life.
Right.
Either her life if she's old, or your life if you're not old enough.
Right. And if you're just starting out, or if maybe you do have some rates that you might think a little bit low, try raising them by a percentage for a little while. See how it works for you. But another thing about charging not only your what you're worth, or maybe a little bit more, it cuts down a lot on those extra questions while you're on site.
True. And don't do phone support.
Right.
I have refused to do phone support or remote support, because sometimes remote support might help, but I only do remote support for, like, family, and that's a select group, because I have culled down my friends, my social circles, and I literally mean this. I have culled down my physical social circles to people that are able to reinstall their own computer. I have a nose for people who want to be your friend and have an agenda. And if I smell that you have an agenda, you're out. You're really out. I've got friends in, and this is more social, but it might be a good tip if you're doing this on the side or for a living or something. I've got three circles. I've got Circle C, which gets tech support but pays for it. Period. I've got Circle B, which gets tech support. Circle C doesn't get tech support. You're a friend. You want tech support. I'm not going to help you. Not perhaps because you're my friend and I want to keep it that way. Then you have Circle B, which are your clients. They want tech support. They pay for tech support. And then you have Circle A, and Circle A has to be an intimate circle of about five computers, like your better half, boyfriend, girlfriend that says my computer broke. Charging her, him an hourly fee, you might sleep on the couch that night. So, and that's my circle A. So circle C, people you do not help. You do not want to help because you don't like him, or you do not want to help because you have a friendship relation with them and you say, I'm not going to start touching your computer because it's going to screw our friendship. Because, you know, it's like being friends with an IT guy is like friends with benefits, but you don't have sex together, but you fix each other, you fix their computers. And you want to keep that friendship in place. So you say, look, we're friends, but I'm never going to touch your computer. You got your clients. Hello. This is my fee. This is what you pay. This is a business relation. And then you got your select circle.
Very tight knit group.
Yeah. And I've actually kicked out people from circle A to circle B. And I've kicked people from circle C into circle B. And, you know, vice versa. So.
Well, you just have to be selective because at the end of the day, it is your time and time is money. So it's your money at stake here.
Yeah. And one of the things I don't do either is phone support, because there used to be, my wife always giggles when we remember those times. Saturdays, rainy Saturdays, terrible. People had time to tinker. My phone would not stop. Holidays, you know, bank holidays, like a Thursday off or a Friday off, you know, where the shops were closed and people had time to tinker. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, the week after that, I wouldn't be home for the whole week. You know, every night I would be gone to client. That was always funny to see. But the industry has also changed. I mean, people have tablets and laptops now. Tech support isn't what it used to be anymore.
Yeah, specifically with phone support, I believe it was Matt Rainey, who is one of the co-hosts of Podnuts Pro. For any clients, he basically would let them call him, and if he can answer one yes or no question in less than 30 seconds of an explanation, then he won't charge him. Anything beyond that, he just starts that clock.
Yeah, and sorry about that. The window, the thing about phone support is, with all due respect, Jonathan, you're a cool guy, and you won't take this the wrong way. Doing tech support over the phone is like John and a NATO trying to teach you how to drive.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. No, I work in a service industry, and I work in retail, and I have and we purchase used items from people, and they'll come in routinely and say, "Yeah, my particular item, it's not working. And you know, how much can you give me for it?" And I tell them, I said, it's like you're telling me what kind of sound your car is making and you want me to diagnose it for you. I just don't know. I'm sorry. You need to bring it in. Yep. And yeah, and Jonathan will love that that use of his
abilities. Let me paraphrase that. You know, doing tech support over the phone for a business user, a small business user, is like Jonathan trying to teach you to fly a jet.
There's
only one mistake. You click there. Boom. Right. Oh, yeah. All my invoices have gone. What have you done? I don't know.
You tell me. No.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've gone off the beaten path here a little bit into some good territory, but I want to go back to helping people migrate and what's some specific tools that not only you are using as a tech to make that possible, but maybe setting up their Windows 8 or their alternate OS environment.
Okay, now what I did with this XP client is I backed up their data ahead of time. Then I did a double check for proprietary software. There was no proprietary software. And then I started looking at things like things that are not cloud-based. If you have the chance to get a client on a cloud-based system so his files / email / contacts are in the cloud, good. That will make migration a lot easier. And it will also help your client because he can just, you know, switch PCs like he switches underwear. I hope he switches underwear more frequently. But that helps a lot. If it's not, try to look for software that is migratable and that is available on multiple systems. Because I want to make migrations that I do slider friendly, I tend to use, and that's my bias, of course, cross-platform software. Software that's available on a Mac, on Linux, on Windows, and that makes sliding from one OS to the other or one ecosphere to the other whole lot easier. If you combine that with cloud environments, basically the only thing that's going to change for the user is the hardware and the area where the start button is. Mm-hmm. So that's actually quite important to plan ahead. You know, plan your strategy ahead with your clients. Don't act on a whim. Also, there are certain amounts of software that I do not support, that I say out of the box, look, I'm going to be your tech support guy. And if this is not legacy or you have not used this for X amount of time, I'm not going to support it because I'm going to give you an alternative that I can support. For example, Outlook Express, no way in hell I'm going to support that. IncrediMail, I am running, I'm walking out that door right there. So stuff like that is important to me. Mostly I have my clients on Thunderbird if they require a local client. And that is because I want to make any migrations to another platform easily. And Thunderbird and Firefox have a great tool that's called Moz Backup. And Moz Backup will actually take the entire Thunderbird configuration files and the Firefox configuration files and back them up. If you go through the new system and you reinstall Thunderbird and you reinstall Firefox, you can just use Moz Backup to restore everything in perfect condition. It's a beautiful migration tool and it's free.
I've never heard of that before, and I myself am, I don't want to say I'm trying to ditch Google altogether, but I'm trying to become more aware of alternatives, and when I think of alternatives as far as, you know, browsers and email solutions, Mozilla definitely comes to mind. So that sounds like a great tool, because I'm so reliant on, especially bookmarks and, you know, on Chrome, I'm so reliant on Chrome, and it's so nice to be able to literally boot up any device now and just log in to my Google account and have everything there for me. So to have a tool like this to be able to back up and potentially put it on multiple systems or to access it from multiple systems for Mozilla products, it sounds very nice.
Yeah, Moz Backup is a great tool. Specifically, so I've migrated over their documents and settings. I've done a backup of Moz Backup. Then most of my work is mostly done because I've got the data, I've got the mail, I've got the web history, I've got the bookmarks. Then I start looking at the new system. So in my case, I booted up Windows 8 on the Mac Mini, which was like screaming fast. Made sure all the drivers were in place. Made sure that all the software was in place. That all the updates were in place. And then I start reinstalling the system. Now, for the proprietary software where the user has a license for, I use the CDs or whatever if I have to. And for the rest, basically the standard software that I put on there, I use a tool called Ninite.com.
Yep.
I think it's Ninite.com, where you basically point and click for the latest versions of all the apps that you want to, and you just put them on there. Mm-hmm. As for apps, you know, Chrome, Firefox, Thunderbird, stuff like that, it's really important. A good virus scanner is good. I like Windows Defender personally. It's kind of hassle-free. I've done AVG for the longest time, but AVG is becoming where you, when you update your definitions and you click the wrong button, it installs a trial version of the paid product and starts nagging you afterwards, just like McAfee does, which is something I absolutely hate.
Yeah, I used to use AVG free as kind of a teaser for those people that absolutely didn't want a paid solution whatsoever. Because, I mean, you know, times are tight, and I always pitch it to them like, look, you know, I'll come back in a month and I'll clean your computer again, but it's going to cost this much. Like, yeah. I will, and I tell people all the time, I said, I will take your money gladly, or you could take this extra step, spend an extra $30, and I'll set this up for you and you'll be good. Some people still don't go for that, though.
And it's also true the other way around, because what you have is that the the money the person does not have to spend on licensing is money he can spend on your hours.
That's right.
So free software is really important there. And I've known people who've been on cracked copies of Office for the longest time, and I've moved them over to Google Docs or to OpenOffice, and you know. One of the things that I said is, well, basically, it's going to be this or the paid version. I am not going to to help your meth habit out here by giving you free drugs. No way. You're a big boy now. Either you buy your own dope or you come clean. And a lot of them have come clean. And especially when you give them the price of the product, you know, you want office or you want open office? I want office. Okay, office is 300 euros. Oh, I want open office. Okay, that's good.
I love how the drug analogy is making, it's turning this into like an after school special, you know, like yes. you walk in, well, what are you doing? They're sitting there sweating, you know, working on an Excel spreadsheet. I'm fine. I don't have a problem. You know, rubbing their nose off, you know. Okay.
Pirate Bay. Crack's not working.
Yeah, right. So would you say that in this instance, it sounds like you're trying to set these people up with a lot of open source alternatives that can really be used in any environment, which in turn, not only does it make support either from you or from the communities associated with that software very accessible, but also it makes your job easier in the long run because you're not having to learn a lot of different tools for specific environments. You're learning tools that will work for many environments.
Yeah. Cloud for end users, if there's no confidential data involved, cloud first, open source, cross-platform second, proprietary software third. That's the pyramid. Now, what I do on the new system, of course, if it's an OEM system, I decrapify it. I decrapify the crap out of it until, you know, all the McAfees and all the ding-dongs are done. If I see any printer and there's a CD that comes with the printer, I throw that CD into a low elliptical orbit around Mars. And then I download the driver and only install the driver and not all the ding-dong software that comes with it.
Not the language packs?
Not the language packs, not the free OCR, not the God knows what. If they need it, I'll install it and I'll install a product that is doing the job and isn't a bunch of crapware that makes up for the measly cost that you pay for the printer because you're going to pay your the left kidney of your firstborn to get ink cartridges into that thing later on. So no, not going
to
do that.
You're not the first person to mention that in one of those agreements that you're just clicking I agree to, so...
I love both kidneys and I do not have a firstborn, so I cannot click agree.
Oh, there you go. So specifically on not only being conscious of what you're installing it and not relying on any of the software solutions provided with you, because I mean, I personally like Logitech as a company with their peripherals. Like I love their mice, but you do see, you know, these like stacks of discs, these huge manuals. It's like, it's a mouse. I'm just going to go download the current software for it.
Yeah.
So being conscious of what you are installing to provide them a good environment is one thing, but what are you using? Let's say, for instance, that you did buy them a new Windows 8 system, you know, with a license on it. What software are you using to peel away that garbage that they don't need that's slowing down their brand new system from day one?
I love CCleaner. I like to use that a lot on running systems, but also because CCleaner has a pretty good uninstaller. There's an app called the Decrapifier. You can Google for it, and that helps decrapify your system. And mostly you got to be a little bit careful when decrapifying because there's crap on there that you need.
Right.
And you know, systems don't come with recovery CDs anymore. So be careful. I usually cull by hand. You know, you use the CD or pants like Bonzi Buddy, probably not a core application. No.
Right.
So I'll call it by hand.
Okay.
So then you've got the data over, you got the apps over, the system's always almost ready. And what I do is I put the entire data recovery the data backup that I did into one folder and I called it old PC. Always put it on the desktop, old PC. And then together with the client, I'll start dragging the write software to the right places. And if that location doesn't exist anymore, I'll either create it or I'll create a shortcut to the new location that's named like the old location, for example. You know,
okay, got it.
Like my documents doesn't really exist anymore in Windows 8.
Okay.
Not in its current form. So you just have to make up a shortcut that kind of looks like my documents.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, help them. So the data is over. Then I check the data with them. Do you have everything? And we go through their applications and we go through their data. And basically, the system is almost ready. What I do then is I try to make, try to install remote software, you know, remote access software, should it be needed in the first week after the migration, because you're going to have some issues that pop up because it's all brand spanking new. And you have to tell your client this, look, we just migrated, we just did brain surgery. You know, you might walk a bit wonky the first days. Don't shoot me. There are still things that we can do. And that is very important. Then go to the other system. And if there's a mail client, disable the accounts. And so mail doesn't get popped three to two different systems. But keep it intact just in case for just a little bit longer. Because that's important. What you want to do is that your user still has to have a fallback. A lot of techs take the old machine with them. I don't. Even if they ask me afterwards, I might pick it up and donate it somewhere, but I don't take the old system with me ever. If the machine should be repurposed immediately, there is one tip that I can never stress enough. And what you need is an application by, VMware. And it's called VMware Converter. And here's a golden tip, kids. Virtualize the old machine. Use VMware Converter on the old machine and make a VM out of it.
There you go.
And then put that VM with VMware Player on the new machine. So should there be something that pops up and they are in a panic, they just launch the VM and they can run it from there. So that's something I always do. I call it giving it eternal life. I give the old machine eternal life. I always do that because you never know.
Yeah, VMware Converter. That is very cool.
That's a free app.
Yeah. I want to ask you about this in a bit too, but when I specifically when you're talking about not removing the old machine, even if it just sits there dormant and they never boot it again, just having it in the room is going to bring them a certain level of comfort that they deserve. And especially in the goodwill that you're giving them by having that remote access software on there in the beginning and letting them know ahead of time, because preparing them on many different levels for what they're about to experience is key to not only helping them for when they do encounter that, you know, because encountering a problem out of the blue with no warning whatsoever, it's just going to terrify them. But knowing that, oh, he said this might happen, and now I have this fallback measure to either call him or ask him for help via this piece of software, it's just going to be completely seamless. You're not going to get that terrified or angry phone call.
The secret here is, don't say you're done.
Right.
Do a migration and don't, I know your ego might want to, but don't say, booyah, I'm done. Say like, and this is what I use, what I say. I said, your migration's complete. I'm going to make, if you agree, I would like to let you work with the system for the upcoming week and make an appointment next week just to come by. That's good business, by the way, because you charge your hours, and check if there are any issues. That way you do not, and you say, and if everything is resolved, we can either terminate the old machine or do something more. I mean, one of the things that you have to make sure is that the backups are running on the new machine. Mm-hmm. Perhaps one of the good excuses is, we're going to start your backups on your new machine. I want to check if those backups are good. I would like to do a restore test next week, perhaps, just to make sure that we have everything. Mm-hmm. So you don't say, I'm done. The client runs into a problem and he says, you didn't do your job right. I'm going to call you up and I'm going to be angry. But you say, the migration's done. We're going to let you work with the system for a week and iron out the final problems next week. So you get a second appointment. That's good for business. You give the customer a sense of what he can expect, that he can expect some trouble. And you also, you know, that's your reputation. You say like, mistakes can happen. I will come and fix them.
Right, right. And I encountered this once or twice, probably more, but whatever, where I did forget something so basic and I went back and it took me a little while and I was like, they were like, well, what do I charge you? I'm like, well, I'm not going to charge for that 10 minutes that I fixed a problem for you. But now that I'm here, what other questions do you have? But specifically, the way you're doing it with scheduling an appointment, which is a great tip, is let's say it's a week out, so from Saturday to Saturday. It also gives them an artificial sense of urgency to get in there and bang on it and get those questions ready for you in a condensed manner that's going to prevent questions for weeks to come.
There you go. Or things not being checked, and then like 3 months later, the accounting software doesn't work, and you have to go like, oh, wow, right. what did I do there?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I put a lot of responsibility on my customers. Passwords and stuff, that's your responsibility. I teach them how to keep track of passwords. Mm-hmm. I give them tools to keep track of passwords, like, for example, KeePassX. But I will not walk into a situation anymore where I say, what's your Gmail password? And they look at me and they say, like, I thought you knew. I make up their passwords, mostly, because I tend to make up funky passwords that they think are so cool they want to tell them to their friends because they can remember them, yet they are very complex.
Right.
But I always keep, I will let them keep track of it. The one other thing what I do after a migration is to make sure that I've written down everything that I've done. This is important should they ever go to somebody else for tech support. And I've had this where I had to let a client go because I didn't have any time anymore. And they could literally hand over together with me the copy to the next tech support guy, and he could pick it up flawlessly. And this customer still recommends me instead of their new tech support guy to all her friends, because when he couldn't help me anymore, she says, he still provided me with the data and the transparency that somebody else could. And that might seem bad for business, not hoarding the secret, being completely transparent. I guarantee you, this will get you more business than you ever thought, because you are really working for the client, and you are also giving the client the responsibility of choice and the responsibility by, you know, you don't only say, look, this is completely transparent. You also have, you know, a record of all of their passwords, and it's written down, and you don't have to make be responsible for that. So that helps you and helps them. So you have to turn that into a business opportunity.
No. And that's just another great tip. But are you also taking, like, perhaps notes along the way, like almost like a customer document to potentially give to them to go to another tech?
Yeah, I might do a small log sheet when I did a migration. Especially, this is especially interesting when I'm working with a proprietary software. I'll usually just punch out in a text file or Google Doc, you know, copied that file from there to that file from there. And when I work with proprietary tech support for, I don't know, bookkeeping software or something more exotic, it really helps that they know what I did. And sometimes I have to communicate with them directly. Sometimes I let the client communicate with them. Not always, because it's tech to tech tends to work out better. But I think that's really important. I've worked with a client of mine who had a proprietary database program in Delphi, written by a tech support guy that, you know, just did it in their free time. He had a total different sense of responsibility than I had, or sense of approach. And when he got an entire log file of what I did, he was kind of intimidated, and he had to step up his game. So my customer got better service from him, and she said it. She said, wow, I never got him on the phone, and now I do. And wow. And that builds trust, and that trust gets you through the door and gets you through the door for years to come. And I've had clients where I started out at a fee, and I'm now working at an hourly fee. I started out 7 years ago, and I work for those clients. Well, I don't do them anymore, but the last time I went to those clients before I quit my side job, I had charged triple that amount an hour, and they would still were happy to pay me.
Right.
Because you build a sense of trust. One of the things that we do is we're a doctor. What I've always learned is that we are like a doctor. We come into people's homes. We come into people's lives. We come into people's computers, their digital diaries, their digital lives. We have to work with a sense of discretion and a sense of trust, because sometimes, and that's because I have a social training, sometimes you're a therapist. You know, people talk to you while you're fixing their computer. Keep your distance. But be discreet, be professional. Always think of yourself as a kind of the Dr. McCoy who listens but keeps his distance and keeps his ethics. It's really important. The sooner you let the tech superhero cloak fly, the more professional you become.
No, I couldn't agree more. And you do have to be able to listen to their problems to a certain extent, because it might be, you know, the end of the world to them, but it might be a simple solution. And if you let them explain their frustrations and let them talk, because you're only going to be thinking about more ways to fix it. Say, oh, well, have you thought about this? Have you heard of this? And you suggest that other, you know, piece of software, the piece of hardware that's just going to eliminate that problem for them altogether. And it's like you've reached into their mind and fixed something even more important to them than just, you know, a computer experience, but something that was a cause of frustration or pain.
Look, as a tech support guy, Windows is Windows. Computers are computers. You have technical skills. 50 other kids on the block are going to have technical skills. You're all... I went to a job interview once where I was with three former colleagues of the computer shop that I worked. We all had the exact same training. I walk in the door, and the one thing that they said is, you're here, we're going home. I had the exact technical skills that they had, but I had a different approach to the problem. Because what's up here, the social approach is what's... The technical approach is what's going to get you... to be able to fix the computer, but your attitude is going to get you in the door, and the way you treat your clients is going to get you coming, is going to get you in the door more and more, gets you coming back. That's the recurring business right there, attitude. If you know the Saturday Night Live skit with the IT guy who's really condescending to his users, I forget the name. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. Don't be like that. If your user says, I've worked with this and it's been such a problem and blah, 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 blah. And you go, click, it's done. I know you want to say, well, yeah, you know, it's that easy. And your client will offer that praise to you. Go like, oh, wow, you're so smart. And you say like, and there's a secret. Well, you know, you got to know it. And they kind of hid that. So I really understand that you had to look for it. And to be honest, I had to look for it too. There's no problem in doing that. It might not be true. You might think, dumbass, but that's going to give your client self-esteem. If you're going to be condescending and, you know, I'm the whiz kid, I can do that. That's okay, but, you know, nobody wants to sit there and be talked down to by an 18-year-old, so to speak. So giving your clients respect, even if you have to pretend, is something that helps.
Yeah, another huge good piece of advice, and it's so simple. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, do unto others. Really, it is, and you get so many good conversations from that. But you build such a rapport with them that not only are they going to call you and potentially pay you not only above what you're worth, but they'll tell everybody about you. And word of mouth is the best, and your reputation is the best.
That is a fact. That is something I've always clung to, a reputation of being discreet. I've worked for companies who, you know, private, small companies that I did, you know, on the side, aside from my day job, when I had this, when I used to be a tech support guy on the side, you know, I had this little side company to my day job. I've never done it almost never done it full time. I've worked for very interesting companies in very interesting lines of work, where I got to see very interesting things, and it might be very interesting to brag about them, but you're a superhero. So, you know, what happens, what Batman does during the night, Bruce Wayne's not going to spill the beans no matter what he saw. So, and having that amount of discretion And being a little bit worldly about it, understanding your clients, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I've had a colleague of mine who worked for a escort service.
Oh, wow. So okay.
And, you know, he said like, yeah, it was an escort service. It was really weird. And he went in and he put up a Google Apps environment, gave every girl that worked there a special mailbox, gave them a smartphone, shared calendars, and the madam of the house who did the bookings suddenly had multiple calendars for multiple girls, and she could plan them in, and she could plan in travel times, and she could text them. She could text the drivers that brought them. She could use Google Maps to see how far along they were, if they, you know, how long it would be until they would be at their next client and stuff like that. And he had gone into this situation as if it was a logistical issue.
Right, yeah.
And it wasn't. I mean, and, you know, the manager of the house, she was delighted. She said, like, you're so down to earth on this, and you've absolutely seen my business, understood me. So he went in, and the first conversation that he had is, what, you know, here's the computer, and no. What do you do? Well, we do this and this and this. Okay, this is what we're going to fix. And that's something that's very important with clients, too, when they want new software or new situations. I want Office. Okay, no, what do you want to do? I want to keep track of my accounts. Oh, okay. Perhaps you need accounting software. Let them speak in problems, never in solutions.
Right.
Keep
right.
asking until you get a problem. Never get a solution. And that is something sometimes that's where you stop being a provider of software into being an advisor. And once you are in the advisor role, you can sell them everything if it's still ethical.
That's true. And much, and you mentioned this earlier too, but when you're talking about, if you're talking specifically about people, let's say in the case of Office and moving them to LibreOffice, just as an example, right? You're removing them from an environment, which arguably you could say that, especially as a business, they're locked into, especially with updates and, you know, service contracts and all that. And you're moving them to a open environment. Well, then it does you no good. It's almost kind of backhanded or upside down for you to then try to lock them into you as their tech.
Yeah,
because you're like, I'm freeing you as long as you stay with me. You know what I mean?
That's it. You know, if you've got a bird in a cage, it will be in the cage and it will be unhappy and it will be complaining. You actually have this guy to service me. If you open up the cage, they will sit on your shoulder if you do it right. And that's added value. And that will get you recurring business. Don't overcharge. Understand your client. Don't be somebody that jumps every time the client calls, perhaps in the beginning, or perhaps not in the beginning, but later. It's you have to have a relationship with your clients, and long-term business relationships with your clients will get you more business than just, you know, quick ambulance things, you know, where you basically are the digital paramedic that comes in, does the thing, and rushes out. So one of the things that I also suggest that might not always be an issue, but might not always be possible, don't sell anything. I never sold hardware. I advised my customers to go buy hardware there and there, and I advised them on what hardware that they bought, but they never bought it from me. I picked up a little bit of revenue from the stores that I sent them to, because I would work with these stores. But I would suggest the hardware based on what the client needed, send them to the store, they would buy it there, I'd pick up a little bonus because I made a deal with store such and such, and that was it. The client never had the feeling that I pushed anything onto them, which for me was important. Don't sell them your secondhand hardware. Never do. Never.
Yeah, I always sold new stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and if you have to sell them your hardware, give them three options. The cheap one, the middle range, and the high one. And if you are good at what you do and you have earned this level of trust, you'll be able to sell them the high one every time.
That's true. That's very true. One of the things, I think I spoke about this, almost 2 years ago on my episode of Podnuts Daily, but I would always carry two different keyboards and two different mice in my trunk, I called them my tech van. It was just my Toyota, you know, Corolla, whatever. And
a little SWAT bus.
Right, yeah, yeah.
SWAT van.
my mobile geek palace. But I would always have those, because sometimes you walk into those environments where either it's just filthy or it's completely old or they have kids and it's missing keys. And there's nothing better than trying to sell someone something than actually having them experience it in their environment without having paid for it yet.
True.
So in the case of physical peripherals, I would suggest to have one or two different options in that case. But yeah, you don't want to have too many options where you sort of closed, let's say in the case, okay, we've migrated you. Now let's talk about your hard drive solution. Do you need a new monitor? Do you need a new floor mat? Do you need a good chair? Do you need a printer? You know, it sours anything you may have done to build that rapport with the person, and they just realize, oh, now he's just going off a checklist in his head.
The great thing is when you walk out the door and they say, hey, you also have monitors? What would you suggest? And then that's when you have him.
Yep.
A great sales tip that I learned from my master at the computer shop is, she was good. She was unethically good. This is the cheapest solution. This is the mid-range solution. And this is solution for the, well, you know, well, this is perhaps a little bit above your budget. Boom. Always. Because the people were in the store, and she always did this with another client standing next to this client.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And they were like, oh,
we're not cheap. And they always bought that. She was wonderful. I would see her do this, and I was just, it was like, oh my God, the queen's at work. That was wonderful. And the way she placed that third option, and well, this is, well, this might be a little bit about above the budget range that you came in for today, and oh, boom, geez. She would sell it every time. I thought at some moments it was unethical. And the way I did it is like, this is the least we can do for you. This is the cheapest thing. This is meeting your requirements, but barely. But I understand that budget, that you might have a budget. This is what I would advise. This is good and good enough. And this is what I would use. But, you know, I'm a nerd. Boom. Yeah, option number three.
It's almost the same thing. But what you're doing is you're addressing. And what I was about to ask, too, is that in most cases, you, especially if you know if it's an important piece of tech for you, you as a techie are going to save up that extra month or whatever and get that higher end camera, that better lens, or that better keyboard, because you know that you're going to be using that day to day, and it's more of an investment. You're not just making a purchase. So speak to them about what you would buy or what you do own. Like I don't suggest brands to people that I would just make money on. I say, I have one of these at home. I've used several of these over many years, and it's a brand that I know and trust myself. So, but yeah, in that specific example with the lady, not only calling them out as to, oh, this might not be for you, but doing it in front of another customer in a retail environment, then they not only do they have their, you know, their personal buying power at stake, but at stake in the witness of someone else. That's just genius.
Yeah, that's yeah. But she was good at that. She was. I really called her the upsell queen. But she used to own a furniture store, and she was brilliant. And one of the things that you, when you're working with other tech support guys, in perhaps a company or something, steal with your eyes, learn from your elders, have an ego, use that ego, because it will give you confidence and sometimes help you in situations where you need to get through. But try to put that ego aside when you have a chance to learn. And here's the terrible one. Never be afraid to learn from your clients. Because then when they get a chance to teach you something, oh, that's very good for business. It doesn't, don't try not to look like an idiot, but don't pass up a chance of learning something. That's always really important.
Never be 100% certain that your way is the right way. Always be open and fluid.
Yeah, I know that I don't know.
Yeah,
said a brilliant Greek philosopher once, and that's actually the most important one. So I haven't been really helpful in the technical department, but I've hopefully imparted some experience.
Well, no, you've given us some great stories and some good software to use as far as migration. I do have a. I have a quick question, and I have one other thing. We'll wrap up because we're over an hour right now. Okay. But have you? Well, I'm sure I would say I would assume that you have. But part one of the question is: have you migrated a home user to Linux? And if so, what kind of success have you had?
I have migrated a. Wait, Saskia, who orders Mimio Grid? Sorry, that was Dutch. I have migrated a 83-year-old woman from Windows 95 to Ubuntu, and that worked fine.
Okay.
That's how I... She had a Windows 95 laptop. She did some games on it. This is the geeky grandmother of my wife. And she had some games on it. And the computer that she had was literally falling to pieces. So I took a look at what she did. Once again, requirements management, demand management, seeing what the user does. And I said, you know, I've got a system that you can use that has a lot of games on it. She said, cool. So I brought in the Ubuntu laptop, made it look kind of like the Linux laptop. It's like the Windows laptop where she would have easy access to her games. I kind of modified the UI so it would be easy for her to go to the games. And she played games on that for 3 years. And then she went onto the internet and got a decent, a heavier laptop. And we put Linux Mint on there. and she's been surfing and Facebooking and doing her games and stuff like that. And recently that system started to run hot, so we moved that one to her living room, where she has it as a backup laptop, and now she has slid into Windows 8 and is using that for her daily internet use. So that is my senior sliding citizen. She is 86 years old. She's been using Linux for 5 years now, or 4 years, and now she's on a combo of Linux, Windows 8, and she uses a Sony e-reader to read her books when she goes to the hairdresser or goes to bingo night.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Yeah. So just real quick to kind of wrap that up. Would you say that not only moving her from 95 to Ubuntu, but then from Ubuntu into Windows 8, do you think there was an element of not treating it like a big deal? Like, okay, your whole world is changing, Nana, because it sounds to me like you went in, saw the environment she was used to using, provided something similar to her, and she just kind of fell into it and got right in the back of the rhythm again.
The big thing about Windows 8 is that we look at it like, oh, it's Windows 8. No, it's an operating system. And an operating system should be transparent. And because the UI of Windows 8 has changed so dramatically, people think like, oh my God. No, it's only the UI that has kind of changed dramatically. Is that a good move by Microsoft? Perhaps, perhaps not. What we should treat a migration with is, what I say is like, we're moving you from XP to Windows 8. There's going to be a slight change. You're going to have some tiles, but you can get through that. Basically, you're going to do what you want to do on the computer. And that's it. Treat migrations as the migrations of the things users do on their computer, not from one OS to another OS. OSs don't count. You know, they are transparent. They are vessels for us to use to travel through the seas of digital landscapes. But they are no more than that. It's not about the cars. It's about how and where you drive them.
Very, very good. Okay. Okay. I got to ask you one more thing, and I didn't mention this to you ahead of time, but what I'm sure if you and I were to go to dinner, I would pull you aside and I would ask you, what's like your worst like tech nightmare story, because those always seem to be the best, because they bring out a lot of not only your personality, but your problem solving. So do you have such a short story that you would like to share with us now?
I've got a sad one, where I didn't make it. There was a user whose husband was terminally ill. And he was in bed a lot, and he had been reading a book, The Da Vinci Code, back in the days when it wasn't popular yet. And he had looked up so much online about it, and it was really something he held on to because he wanted to discover the secrets. And he was, the man was terminally ill, but this was his one refuge that he could do and be busy with. And his computer died. And I tried to restore this massive amount of data that was folders and folders and folders in 10,000 places. And I used a ghost backup to ghost the entire system so that I could recover it should I need to. I reinstalled the system, and when I wanted to resume or restore the ghost backup, I had seen that I had overwritten the first file. So I'd basically destroyed the backup, and I felt really, really, really bad. And I called up the woman and I said, I have bad news. I have done something wrong. I have destroyed the backup. And she said, that's okay. My husband died yesterday. So that's the one that never lets go. That's not a hero story. I mean, there are plenty of hero stories. That's you can find those out a lot. But this is the one that I really learned something from, because you know it might seem trivial, but to that man, it was very, very important. And I can still remember lively the feelings that I had when I failed, and I felt so bad. And then you know, hearing the news that he passed away, That's the one that sticks. That's the one that's you know, always at the back of my mind, or sometimes, you know, just wandering around when I can't sleep.
Yeah, no, that is a good story, and what a lesson to learn, because if you talk to any tech, it's usually backups. I mean, brought up a lot, but that particular one, and plus, I think everybody has their thing, you know, that they will research, you know, to no end, or that film they will watch over and over again, because it's their one comfort zone. So when you were talking about that book, I totally just related to it. You know, I collected all the articles, all the analysis, everything. So, yeah, that's a very touching story, but a good lesson to be learned, especially with backing up other people's experiences, other people's lives. They literally are in your hands.
Yes, and I got lucky. Because I would not have known how to explain to that man who was terminally ill that I had lost all his data and his work of the last months that he had so painstakingly put together. So that's one I dodged a bullet there, I want to say, but that's not really the right sentence. But yeah, that's right. One that sticks. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great story. Well, I want to thank you very, very much for being on the show. Please, by all means, plug anything that you'd like to at this time.
Very simple. Nightwise.com, KNIGHTWISE.com. That's the place to go for hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. We have a website with articles. We have a weekly video blog. We try also to do a weekly podcast and a video screencast. So we got quite a lot of content coming out. We have a great group on Google Plus if you want to join it. Nightwise.com/Google Plus, all one word, if you want to join the gang on Google Plus who helps contribute to the show. And you can subscribe to the Nightwise.com podcast very easily. Nightwise.com/subscribe. I'm at Nightwise on Twitter. I'm Nightwise on Google Plus. I'm Nightwise on Facebook. That's about it, I guess. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much again for coming on the show. And Nightwise made not only a great appearance on the show, but you proved that just by simply emailing me at cody@podnuts.com, you got on the show literally just within days.
Yes, it can be done. Yes, listeners, he is this desperate that he will even get me on the show on short notice. So...
That's one way of saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It was me or a talking Elmo with flat batteries. So.
But that guy had some good tech stories from the trenches, I'll
tell
you.
I programmed
them into him, and they're all fictitious, but they're still good stories.
Yeah. I love Cody. It was getting old after an hour, but, you know.
Yeah. So, yes, we are still looking for additional guests for Podnuts Daily. We'd like to fill out our calendar, hopefully at least through the end of summer, but if not the end of the year. We will do multiple recordings per week if we have to. If you are a computer tech or if you have a product that you want to speak about, please email me at cody@podnuts.com, and I will send you a list of available dates, and we will get you on the show. And you, too, can bring a lot of great tips, just like Nightwise did just now. And Nightwise, thank you once again for coming on the show. I really do appreciate your time, and I hope you have a good weekend that you're heading into.
Yep, we're going to the north of France, so we got the car packed, got the tent in there, and for us that's like a two hour and a half drive, so it's not that far away. That's the perks of having a very small country. You're immediately abroad.
Nice.
I can just hop a border in 20 minutes, so yeah, I'm going to enjoy the sunny weather and not take a lot of tech with me, although, yeah, I'm going to take a lot of tech with me.
I like to think I know
content from there.
I like to think I know you a little bit just from your show, and I know that you're going to have a tech bag or two. So,
yeah,
all right,
definitely.
Okay. Well, we'll have fun for me. Have fun for our listeners. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and make sure to do your backups.
Yes, and stay alive.
Yes. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much for listening.
Good night.
Get a computer repair business website up and running, starting from scratch, even if you don't know anything about website design. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to TechSiteBuilder.com/PND, which stands for Podnuts Daily.